Welcome to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac, a show about how to break through obstacles that may be holding you back in life or business. And now your host of Breakthrough Thinking, certified master practitioner in neuro-linguistic programming, business consultant, and CPA, Dave Isaac.
Live from the 1010 Studios in Phoenix, Arizona, you're listening to Breakthrough Thinking. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the show. I'm Dave Isaac, the host of Breakthrough Thinking. And if it is the fourth Tuesday of the month from 2 to 3, it must be Money Management, Wounded Hearts, and Family Crises, starring Larry Moscott. Larry, how are you?
I'm good, Dave. How are you today?
I am great. It's so nice to see you again. It's
very
always
good to see you.
I always like seeing you here because you're a pro at this.
Well,
really, tell the listeners how long you've been. I've
done radio
for
10 years.
That's a lot.
Over 10 years, yeah. A lot of radio.
And you don't own a station yet?
Not yet, no.
Let's joint venture and buy a station. Wouldn't that be good? And we'll throw Tommy in.
Okay. Got to have Tom.
No. We'll throw Tommy in as, like, money. We'll give you $1 million plus Tommy.
We'll use him as currency.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, very nice.
Because he's priceless. He's our wild card here. Yeah. So anyway, it's always cool. We got a little bit different show today.
We do.
You want to talk a little bit? We should talk a little bit about, of course, your firm first, about financial planning.
Sure.
With a twist. I always say it's with a twist because of your background in psychology, making people feel a lot more comfortable, I believe. You know, you treat them as really a whole person, and rather than just the numbers. It's never about the numbers, is it? I mean, that's part of the equation, but you got live human beings in front of you.
You have live human beings, and that's right, Dave. I've been in this business of investment advising, a certified financial planner, for about 30 years now.
Wow!
And as you said, it comes down to being a lot more than the numbers. And I found that I had a background in clinical psychology. That's kind of what I did in my first life, and was a very great background to have to get into a business like ours, because, as you said, the numbers constitute a very small part of what we do.
Yeah.
Most of what we do is deal, quite honestly, with people's feelings, their fears about outliving their money, their fears about losing money investments, their uncertainty and feelings of being overwhelmed by the volatility that we see, the financial crises we're navigating, the issues that go on back in Washington, the so on and on. And that is a big part of what we do. And we work with a lot of clients who are going through some very deep personal crises. Losses of loved ones is a big one, and dealing with the issues of inheritance. And we're going to touch on that a little bit today, too, in a different way than we have in the past. People who are experiencing caregiving crises in their families, people who have unexpected job losses, people who receive financial settlements due to some wrongful event. It could be a wrongful death. It could be a debilitating injury or wrongful loss of a job, and sometimes they result in financial settlements, and you would think that's a happy day. Well, it's really not very much of a happy day. Those things have to be worked through so that we get a really nicely woven tapestry of emotional, lifestyle, and financial events all put together in a nice package. So that is what we do in our business.
Which is very cool, and I think everyone should really, if you think about it, have a financial planner, because it is a skill set, too. I mean, it's behavior stuff, too, mm-hmm. not just a skill set. And not understanding certain techniques, but it involves discipline.
Sure, it's the world of future value intangibles. I like to say.
Oh, that's a good way to put it. Yeah,
and because it's out in the future, and because it's intangible, it comes with a lot of emotional baggage, I guess you could say. And those things have to be worked through, so you're sure you're on course, on track, and where you should be at whatever point you are in your life.
Totally makes sense. And But we have, like we said, a little different show today, and you have a guest in studio today.
Yes, we do. Let me introduce our guest and kind of get our discussion going. We, you know, our shows in the past for the past year have dealt, I guess you could say, with more of the numbers in a manner of speaking. It's been with facts. It's been with planning strategies.
Right.
We've had estate planning attorneys and accountants and hospice administrators and employee benefits advisors and things that certainly were cutting edge strategically and tactically, very cutting edge material. But I was reading the paper, and I'm going to lead into kind of how we got where we are today and why our show is going to be a little different. I was reading the paper, I think it was about a month ago, and came across a very interesting opinions article written by a local author who I'm going to introduce here as our guest in just a moment. And I was touched and impacted by the topic that she wrote on, because it touches something that I do in my business, and I'm going to get into a little bit more of what that particular article was about. But I want to go ahead and introduce our guest today, Dave. Our guest today is author and columnist Jerry Niskern, and it's an absolute pleasure to have Jerry with us today. Let me tell you a word or two about her. Jerry grew up here in Phoenix and had a career in the business of art, and went on to do to appear in many galleries in the western states in the art business, but began writing some time ago and has been ever since writing a column for the Arizona Republic for the past 20 years. And I'll bet many of our listeners have actually read her column and just may not have recognized who she was and what she writes on. She's also quite an accomplished author, Dave. She has written freelance articles for the Chicken Soup books. Everybody's heard of the Chicken Soup books. She's written for the Scottsdale Community College Anthology, Grit Magazine, the Arizona Diamondbacks, something very near and dear to you, the Diamondbacks Magazine. But she is the author of a really interesting and well-written book called Don't Throw the Bread. And this book was about a young girl's journey during the World War II era. It was published by the iUniverse Publishers. And what it did was discuss home life that was in existence back then during World War II. And it goes on to describe the events of an immigrant's story coming here to America and what life was like once they got here, especially as they navigated the World War II era. So to that end, I want to introduce Jerry Niskern. Jerry, thank you for being here. It's a pleasure to have you.
Well, thanks for having me.
Yes, welcome to the show. Very cool stuff.
You.
So why I say it's different is we're going to talk today, Dave, not so much about numbers or leading edge tax strategies or financial planning models or things of that sort, but instead what we're going to do, and I'm really looking forward to this, in kind of just a narrative, free-flowing way, we're going to take a more or less a reflective look on the passage of time. We're going to look at the meaning of family. Yeah, this is a family values radio station, KXXT, and the types of things we're going to discuss are really at the heart of what this station is about, and what perhaps in our culture we don't devote enough time to. There's no shortage of crises in this world today to divert our attention from what our lives mean, what our families mean, where we're going, and what it will all mean once we're gone. So we're going to spend some time talking about that. And as I was thinking about this show, I was thinking, I'll bet not one of us, not one, will have placed on our headstones when we're gone an inscription that reads anything like, gee, I was glad I spent so much time at the office. I just don't think we'll see such a thing, but we might very well see aspects of some of the things we're going to discuss today. Now, as I said, my interest in Jerry Niskern and the body of her work and the meaning of her work to us was captured when I read an article she wrote in the Arizona Republic some time ago. And she wrote about a topic that I think is very interesting, and I think it's very important and meaningful. Important enough that I picked up the phone and I called her, and we got together and talked and figured, you know, she needs to come on the show and talk to our audience about the things that she's written on and their importance, because they're important to all of us. She wrote an article about something called, she calls ethical wills. And when I read it, I realized she was talking about something I've used in my practice for years and years. I didn't call them ethical wills. I called them family letters.
Oh.
And what family letters were about passing on substance other than things. They're passing on values, the intangible worth of family, core meanings of life, core beliefs that define a family and define their direction in this world. I found that family letters or ethical wills are just instructions about, this is how I think you should be in the future. This is what I would like to pass on about what I valued and what I hope you will value and appreciate in the future. So it's about morality. It's about doing the right things. And none of us have ever regretted doing the right thing. And so for that reason, and also for the fact that it was my observation in my practice that people took these family letters or ethical wills very seriously. They took them very seriously. Once their loved one was gone and they were now reading the essence messages that loved one wanted to retain and pass on, they're very meaningful.
It's like a gift.
It is like a gift.
Yeah.
And it's a way to document the existence of that gift by the use of one of these family letters or ethical wills. And so I then went on, and beyond this article that I read, I also went on to read a number of Jerry's other articles, and I just sort of allowed my mind to wander free as I sort of gathered impressions from what she wrote, and these were some of the things, these terms that came to mind when I read them, and I think they'll connect with the people that listen to our show. They were such things as American values, family values, nostalgia, poignant memories, heartfelt, transgenerational matters, inspiration, the qualitative and personal meanings of the passage of time. So we're going to spend some time and talk about some of these things today. And as I say, it's a very free-flowing conversational hour we're going to spend. We have a great guest who spent a lot of time writing and thinking about these types of intangibles that ought to be passed on to future generations. And we're going to discuss some of these. We're going to talk about inheritances. We're going to talk about material values and intangible values and old ideas, new ideas, and get a sense for more the flavor of life rather than the science of life that we've spent so awful much time talking about for a change here. So Jerry Niskern, our guest today, you used to work in the art business.
And
then you began writing, and you've been writing now for many years. As I've indicated, I've read what you've written, and I connected with it at a personal, I felt a heartfelt energy from it, especially as it related to families. Most of us are parts of families, and families do mean something to us. What was it that prompted you to get started in writing, and in writing, what made you zero in on cultural and family meanings over time?
Well, Larry, actually, I had a mother who told stories all the time. She was a great storyteller. And I always, in the back of my mind, thought, I need to get some of this down. Mm. I need to get it written so that the rest of the family can hear it and know it. But then I really wanted to go out for the general public. And I've been lucky because the Arizona Republic has always given me free rein to write about anything I wanted to. Hmm. I'd write about a local football game, or I'd write about why they don't take care of the bridle path on Central Avenue. I'd write about various things, and sometimes very personal things, and things that happened within our family. I've always been careful not to name any names, but I could just tell a story and say a grandson or a nephew or something, and that worked fine. But people seem to enjoy hearing about my family and my ideas about things that were happening around the valley.
Most of what I read that you've written, Jerry, just touched a nerve, and I mean that in a good way. It touched a sentimental nerve. It touched a family nerve. You talk about your family originally from Austria.
My grandparents came over here from Austria in the 1880s, and I've been blessed with a good memory, a very good memory. So I remember the first part of my childhood in West Virginia. My grandpa was a coal miner. He was recruited in Europe to come over and work in the coal mines. And so I remember living close by, and my dad was not in the coal mine. My dad was a administrator of a glass company. He was actually an industrial engineer. But a large part of my mother's family were coal miners, and so I have kind of a soft spot for, I guess you could say, for unions and for immigrants, especially for immigrants.
Sure, I can relate to that too. My family came from Russia, from Hungary, from many places not here, and I too was treated as a child growing up to many stories, many funny sayings, and things that still get passed around our family. I can certainly relate to that.
And you know, it's interesting. You both can relate to that, and bringing in a different culture into America must be really interesting too. Because whether it's coming from Russia or Austria or wherever, there's certainly major differences. And you know, that would be something I'd be interested in, is how your grandparents, your parents assimilated in the American culture, did they?
I have always felt that all immigrants assimilate much more rapidly than a lot of people think they do. There's a lot of discussion about immigrants nowadays, and from my experience, from our family, and from friends and acquaintances that I have here in the valley, second generation have a small family. They assimilate very well, and they do things like everyone here does it. I have never had any concern about that. My grandparents did have a lot of sayings, I guess you could say, and one that I remember, my mother used to say to me, "You be very kind to elderly people because they have a rough time." And I used to say, "But Mom, what if they're not nice to me?" "Makes no difference. Old people have a rough time. Everybody be nice to them." And it always, as a kid, that puzzled me. But as I got older, of course, it made a lot of sense.
Yeah. That one last point on this is, and I've heard this before, I think both of you have heard it, maybe can both of you comment on it. You know, people immigrate here, and it seems like, and I'm just guessing, their attitude is probably one of major gratefulness that they come to America, and they work so hard, and that might be something we want to talk about either now or later in the show, the differences between this type of generation and immigrants coming in and that just work, taking advantage of the great opportunity America has versus maybe, what is it called, the Gen Y or Generation Y or X or whatever it's called. You know, they seem to be the, you know, hand it to me generation. Any comments from either one of you?
Dave, I can appreciate what you're speaking of. Yet I look at my daughters, now very late 20s and early 30s, and while I could say I could have seen a piece of that in their growing up, it's very interesting how quickly they've moved away from that and are very much taking an awful lot of pride in their self-sufficiency and in their thoughtfulness about how their futures will play out. And it's not just the me now type of situation. So we are the true melting pot, I suppose, of the world. We have everything here.
No doubt about it. Why don't we take a quick break, and then we'll get some comments on that question from Jerry when we come back. And, of course, this is Money Management, Wounded Hearts, and Family Crises, starring Larry Moskow with today's special in-studio guest, Jerry Nerskin, a great author and a columnist for the Arizona Republic. And we'll be right back.
Hello, I'm Jessica Olson, and I'm here to introduce you to someone whose job it is to stand together with you at the worst of times. Life throws us unexpected curveballs, including losing loved ones, caretaking, troubled retirements, job losses, and legal settlements. Meet certified financial planner Larry Moskat, who pioneered crisis financial counseling. With a background as a clinical psychology practitioner, Larry has helped numerous people see through their crises to a brighter financial future. Larry?
Thank you, Jessica. At our firm, RII Advisors in North Scottsdale, we know terrible times don't usually last, but the effects of anxiety-infused financial decisions can last a lifetime. For 30 years, our prime goal has been to introduce freedom from fear and a feeling of financial security for our clients. We then move forward with safety and best-case outcome results when it comes to the financial decisions made during the worst of times.
To learn more, log on to www.RIIAdvisors.com. That's RIIAdvisors.com for information on how to get help. Once again, that's RIIAdvisors.com for financial counseling during life's most challenging times.
Are you standing at a crossroad in life wondering what's next? Is it time to reinvent your relationship, your career, your life? Whether you're ready for a reinvention revolution or a reinvention evolution, the support of a couple of great coaches can get you there. When you decide it's time to take your life from just functional to optimal, call Joe and Lori Battaglia of Living the Dream Coaches. 888-505-5762. That's 888-505-5762, or go online to www.livingthedreamcoaches.com. That's www.livingthedreamcoaches.com.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
Hi, I'm Paul, and I'm on the spectrum.
And I'm Kim, and I'm an autism specialist.
The second Monday and Tuesday of each month at 3 p.m. on 1010 a.m.
and online at breakradioshow.com, live and archived.
We're here to help you with
Understanding Autism.
And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. And if it is, like I said, the fourth Tuesday of each month from 2 to 3, it must be Money Management, Wounded Hearts, and Family Crises, starring Larry Moskat. And Larry, I like this show so far. Very, very interesting. delves into the human nature and spirit of people.
I know, and we need to do that from time to time.
Yes.
We've got to get away from the cutting-edge strategies and talk about what we really are.
Very true.
That's what we're spending time doing today, Dave. You know what? I'd like to kind of get back here after the break and talk about Jerry Nusgern's book.
Yes.
Jerry has a very poignant book. I've read parts of it. Not all of it, because I just got it. But it's a touching book, especially if you're someone like me who, as I said, both of my grandparents emigrated from various parts of the world, and you pick things up as you grow up with them. It has aspects of that. Mm. So if you're someone with that kind of a background, you'll appreciate the feeling of the book and the spiritual side and the background. If you have such a background, it's something you can appreciate. But the name of this book, which, by the way, is available at Amazon.com, it's called Don't Throw the Bread. Don't Throw the Bread. And in this book, and we're going to have Jerry explain that one to us, Jerry speaks of her memories of growing up and what life was like during the times of World War II. Mm. So I guess in the way of beginning, what in the world is Don't Throw the Bread, Jerry?
Well, Larry, it's kind of a cute story. My grandmother, as we said, came from Austria. And over there, they raised their own wheat. They ground it into flour. They baked their own bread. So your daily bread was a very important, almost sacred subject. And you did not commit the sin, which is what she would refer to it, the sin of dropping it or throwing it. You had respect for your daily bread.
I can see that. Sure.
And when we were kids, our parents, we would all gather at my grandmother's house. Different families would come, and the moms and the dads would take off outside and sit, or they would go uptown, whatever they wanted to do. But all the kids would stand around my grandmother's. We'd gather around a big oak table in the kitchen, and she would give us coffee. And that was a real big deal to the kids. But along with that coffee, she gave us slices of her homemade bread with lots of butter. Sometimes sour cream if we wanted it.
Oh.
But the coffee would be a fourth cup coffee, half a cup of milk, and lots of sugar. I called that the latte of our childhood. But she always would say, shh, don't tell your mommy I gave you coffee. And my grandmother really didn't speak very much English, so that was a lot for her to say.
Huh. So it was a treat.
It was a treat, and just the idea that it was coffee.
No Starbucks, though, right?
No Starbucks.
Not a Starbucks.
There's a change over the last 60 years, right?
That's
or 40
for sure.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Well, you know, we're talking about this era of World War II, and this concept of showing respect for your food. No one ever told me don't throw the bread, but in my growing up, it was very clear, maybe it was for you too, Dave, that food is not easy to come by, and you had better, the things like finish your plate and things of that sort were aspects of showing respect for and appreciation for having food to eat in the first place. Don't show disrespect, and I can understand that. I truly can.
Yeah, there's no question about it, and that was a saying when I grew up, you know, finish your plate. And they also added, you know, kids are starving in Europe or something, right?
I forgot about that.
That was a saying they used to say.
Right.
But it is part of being grateful and part of taking or not taking things for granted.
That's right. That's right.
Very important.
Well, and to that end, you know, we talked about this book being something of a memoir of growing up during the World War II era, what it was like living with immigrant parents, and what the culture and climate was. I wonder, Jerry, there's certainly been no shortage of wars since World War II. And from your perspective, how did the national climate feel as you can remember. What did you hear adults saying, or what were you thinking? What did you feel with the national climate was at that time during such great upheaval as World War II was, compared with today's climate where, well, certainly we had Korea that followed World War II, but things like the Gulf, Vietnam, Iraq, Afghanistan. We've had no shortage of wars since that period, yet I was only just born right at the end of World War II, so I wasn't really alive and aware back then, but I'm betting things were quite different from what you remember. What is different, from your opinion, between the climate during war back then and the climate during all this succession of wars that we've seen here in the last 20, 30 years?
Mm. Well, Larry, you know, back during World War II, everybody had somebody that was serving in the Army, Navy, Marines. Everybody lived with a little bit of fear, but in this country, of course, kids really weren't afraid for their life like they were in Europe and other countries. The main thing that we had more sacrifices. You know, when I was a kid, they had rationing on meat, rationing on shoes, rationing on sugar, rationing on gasoline. You didn't just jump in the car and take a Sunday ride. That was something you didn't do. And the kids used to go out and collect paper, because they could use it, you know, in the war effort. They used to go out and collect metal, scrap metal, and it was considered an important part of some way that children could help. So there is a big difference. Actually, all those wars are real to me because my high school classmates served in the Korean War, and I can remember at least two that I know were killed in the Korean War. My sons were just slightly young for the Vietnam War, but there were lots of friends who had sons in the Vietnam War. So it seems like this country has had its share of wars, that's for sure.
But, you know, Larry and Jerry, hey, that's rhyming, Larry and Jerry. I should be called Perry, maybe. I'm going to change my name.
Change your name, Dave.
But, you know, as you're talking about that, it seems to me, and very descriptive as you're talking about that, Jerry, is that it seems like in World War II, and I wasn't born at that point, but that everyone seemed to be involved at some level. Now, you take Vietnam, you take some of the recent wars, it's for it's for a few to go over there.
Yes.
And not many people feel it here. Would that be an accurate description?
Well, I think they felt it during the Vietnam War because, you did say Vietnam, because
They did still have the draft and the lottery, that's a good point.
That's correct. They still had the draft. And there were a lot of protests and a lot of people who agreed with the protesters.
Right.
So it was quite different during the Vietnam War.
It was certainly felt here. I was alive and very much in the middle of that time
Vietnam.
And there was no absence of feeling about the war, but generally speaking, and I think you're alluding to it, Jerry, that it was the opposite of what it was in World War II. Veterans who served in Vietnam would come back and be spit on, and be looked at badly, and that was a terrible thing to
country
go through the hell
divided,
that they went through, because they told you're going to go there and you're going to defend freedom, which we really shouldn't get started on that because that's I have some feelings on that myself about defending freedom by flying halfway around the world and engaging others,
or sending a drone in your place.
That's another example of the same thing. That's another example. But the culture, as I've read about and heard about from my parents during World War II, was everyone was on board. Everyone was connected. Everyone was positive and pulled together. And it was a time of cohesion and a time of just coming together and creating a strength that was greater than the sum of the parts. And I think it's a shame that we've had so many other wars since then that have been divisive, that yeah. have been destructive. And then beyond that, the way our veterans in many cases have been treated, it's a terrible thing.
Larry, I think it is, but it isn't, because during the Vietnam War and forward, the Gulf War, the war in Iraq, Afghanistan, people were better informed than they were during World War II. During World War II, people knew what they heard on the radio briefly, what they saw in the newsreel at the movies, and what they read in the newspaper. And I think it's a good thing that there's been more dissension, more protests, with all these other wars we've had, including the ones we're involved in now, because people are better informed.
Well, sure, they are. I'm just thinking about the information age that we live in today, right. and the pros and cons of that. We're better informed of many sides to an issue. And I sometimes it maybe just ends up stirring things up and creates more divisiveness than it does a little less information and a little bit better cohesion together. Yeah,
well,
your thoughts, Dave?
Well, yeah, I mean, better informed, clearly, with technology, mm-hmm. the internet, you can Google stuff, and some information's good, some's not. The Twitter stuff. Also, it's better propaganda, too. I mean, both sides are, you know, the spin
sure.
movement. So,
absolutely.
You know, I'm not going to get political, but that's yeah. why I said both sides do it.
Mm-hmm.
And it is becoming more divisive. So better informed, yes. Do people really, are they really informed? I don't think so. I think they listen more to the emotional stuff by the talking points from each side. And that's a problem, I think. That's as far as I'm going to go politically, but I think it's a problem.
Well, there's a lot of noise.
Exactly, that would be the word.
There's a lot of noise, a lot of white noise out there that maybe is neutral in its delivery, but sometimes is divisive and inflammatory, and maybe doesn't do so much good. I don't know.
It's an interesting topic.
Arguable.
You know, when you stop to think about it, when fathers and brothers were gone during World War II, you didn't hear from them sometimes for weeks at a time.
Yeah.
And then when you did get a letter, half of it was blacked out by the censors.
Mm. Oh.
So nowadays, they talk to their families by email every day mm-hmm. if they're not
yeah.
actually involved in combat.
Or Skype.
Or Skyping.
Or Skype. Yeah.
Picture telephone.
So
it's a different mm-hmm. world as far as...
Yeah.
Someone that goes off to war and the long separations mm-hmm. that families used to suffer.
Oh, yeah.
I guess what what strikes me, in addition to the differences in information, is how different these wars were, how can I say it, in their substance. In World War II, we were attacked.
Yeah.
We were... in a sense, defending ourselves, joining together with others who had been attacked. And we were all on board. Our lives were at risk today. In fact, lives had been lost with no provocation whatsoever. Lives had been lost in Pearl Harbor, and all of a sudden we're in the game. In these wars, Afghanistan, Iraq, lives have been lost. But it's not the same. It doesn't feel the same. It doesn't play the same back at home. And it just makes for a different climate.
Yeah, it seems that way. And it's there seems to be maybe more of an agenda behind the scenes, perhaps. And some we know, some we don't know, some we can guess, and some we will never know.
Sure.
When you mentioned how war affected me and my friends and sisters as a kid during World War II, we were very well aware of it every day. When you walked into town on Saturday, the whole town, I'm just talking about Phoenix, was covered with wall-to-wall airmen from the four different air bases around the valley. Mm. you just had a sense that there was a war going on. You knew it.
Yeah.
You know.
More involved.
More involved.
Seems
and I don't think children nowadays do.
Okay. No.
Well, we're going to, Dave, we're going to pick up there and get into a few more topics, and we'll be right back after a few words.
Hopefully, you'll never have to experience a disaster such as a fire or a flood striking your home or business. But if you do, know there's someone out there who can quickly help you get life back to normal. That someone is ServiceMaster by Disaster Professionals. Just call 602-431-2222, and our professionals will be there to lend a hand. You can be confident knowing ServiceMaster Clean has over 50 years of experience restoring damaged homes and businesses after frightening events such as fires, floods, vandalisms, and other disasters. We can offer services such as emergency cleaning, smoke, soot, and odor removal, in addition to water and fire damage repair. Our solid reputation is the reason insurance companies nationwide know ServiceMaster Clean will get the job done quickly and professionally. Plus, we guarantee to do the work right the first time, or we'll do it over with no questions asked. That's ServiceMaster Clean. We're the company that's first to respond to your call, first to arrive on the scene, and first to guarantee relief. Because delays and hassles are the last thing you need. Remember, 602-431-2222 for ServiceMaster Clean by Disaster Professionals. And get the clean you expect and the service you deserve.
Ridenour, Hynten & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues in corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Ridenour, Hynten & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
Hello, I'm Jessica Olson, and I'm here to introduce you to someone whose job it is to stand together with you at the worst of times. Life throws us unexpected curveballs, including losing loved ones, caretaking, troubled retirements, job losses, and legal settlements. Meet certified financial planner Larry Moscat, who pioneered crisis financial counseling. With a background as a clinical psychology practitioner, Larry has helped numerous people see through their crises to a brighter financial future. Larry?
Thank you, Jessica. At our firm, RII Advisors in North Scottsdale, we know terrible times don't usually last, but the effects of anxiety-infused financial decisions can last a lifetime. For 30 years, our prime goal has been to introduce freedom from fear and a feeling of financial security for our clients. We then move forward with safety and best-case outcome results when it comes to the financial decisions made during the worst of times.
To learn more, log on to www.RIIAdvisors.com. That's RIIAdvisors.com for information on how to get help. Once again, that's RIIAdvisors.com for financial counseling during life's most challenging times.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
Hi, I'm Paul, and I'm on the spectrum.
And I'm Kim, and I'm an autism specialist.
The second Monday and Tuesday of each month at 3 p.m. on 1010 a.m.
And online at breakradioshow.com, live and archived.
We're here to help you with
Understanding Autism.
And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. And if it is the fourth Tuesday of each month from 2 to 3, it must be Larry Mascout, Money Management, Wounded Hearts, and Family Crises. And today, a very unique show today.
Very different one, Dave.
But I like it.
I like it, too.
It's very good. It gets people thinking. And
it really does.
May get people, some people out there emotional. But thought-provoking stuff is always good.
I think so. And we have with us Jerry Nusker, an author, local writer, and columnist for the Arizona Republic, author of the book Don't Throw the Bread, available at Amazon.com. And we were talking about the book, and that's kind of what launched us into a discussion of World War II. And there are a couple things we wanted to go back to and finish up. Jerry, continue on with your thoughts. You had another thought or two on the way this book was set up and what it was about. Finish those thoughts, if you would.
Larry, as I said, I wanted to get a lot of stories down that my mother had told me. But I didn't want to write like a memoir, which would be your whole life. And I began to realize the more I got into writing that some people write several memoirs of different periods of their life. And it's important to choose a framework. And so I thought about this trip that my mother and my sister and I and a cousin took during World War II on a bus because there was no gasoline for civilians to take a cross-country trip. The trains were all devoted to the troops, and you could take a bus trip, but the seats were all first priority for the servicemen, soldiers, sailors, and Marines. So we left Phoenix, and 11 days later, we arrived back east in West Virginia, on a trip that should have taken about 2.5 days.
Mm. I would say that's covered wagon type of
thing. Yeah, exactly.
Just about.
And we would pull into a station, and we would get off, take our suitcases, and wait. And then a bus would pull in, and the driver would step out and say, servicemen first. And 9 times out of 10, the bus would fill up with the servicemen, and off they'd go. Then we'd go back to waiting on our bench again. And looking back on it now, of course, at the time, I was just a kid. I was 12 years old. My sister was 17, a real pretty little blonde, and my cousin who was traveling with us was a young Italian girl. Her dad was Italian, dark curly hair, and a gift of gab. And so the soldiers all enjoyed the girl's company, I know. But I felt sorry for my mother when I thought about it years later that she had a lot of responsibility on her hands in those days with that atmosphere. But actually, I don't think people worried so much about the type of things that go on in cities and around bus stations and all. I don't think they worried back then as much. All the guys out there were just young guys from some hometown somewhere, somebody's brother, somebody's uncle. And so anyway, the book was planned to just take the period of time, which was 11 days, that took us to make that trip. And what I did was I had me as a young kid asking her questions about my grandparents, about how they came here, about different stories that I had heard before, but I never tired of hearing. And so I would just ask the question and then have her tell the story, and it basically just went on during the whole time, and it was entertaining to me, but it actually entertained a lot of young guys traveling home on leave. It entertained them too. And that's what the book was based on.
I see. Okay. Mm-hmm. Interesting stuff. Very interesting. Personal
yeah.
types of things. And, you know, I was thinking as you were talking, we're talking a lot about then and now. And since this is a financial planning show and what we talk about pretty much most of the time, I'm wondering, Jerry, since you were a student of that era, and you chronicled it in your book, at least 11 days of it, as it was your personal experience. What about money? What about ideas, attitudes, values of money that you can recall from back then versus today? Different, the same, better, worse?
Well, Larry, I think that, of course, attitudes about money have changed. I don't remember as a kid having worries about money, which a lot of kids did during those days. I was fortunate enough, my dad was fortunate enough to have a job that I remember one time his work was cut back, the hours were cut back, but he was never actually let go. And we didn't suffer like a lot of families did during the Depression before the war. It was, you know, pretty sad for some of them, but we were lucky in that respect. And during the war, there were jobs, and so people had money to spend. But I think, of course, people in those days had just always been used to being more frugal. I do think nowadays that money is a good thing, too, for kids, because there is money spent on kids for travel. Children nowadays go out to restaurants with their parents that 40, 50 years ago, they wouldn't have gone. They take various classes, drama classes, music lessons. They go off to different camps, and they have a much broader outlook on life and confidence. I never am ceased to amazed at the confidence that I see in young kids, 9, 10, 11 years old, that children back when I was a kid didn't have. I don't remember seeing any shy kids lately, and a lot of kids used to be shy, but they all just have a lot more confidence because that money is spent on them in what I would call a good way.
Mm-hmm. And everyone has a cell phone at 6 years old.
Yeah, isn't that the truth? Isn't that the truth? I was about, I don't know, late 30s, 40 maybe, before I got my first cell phone.
And they were expensive back then. I mean, the airtime, you don't have these plans, unlimited plans.
I know.
I was spending $700, $800 a month.
I know.
That's craziness.
Those really were interesting times. I was thinking as you were talking, since we've been discussing values and outlooks and family styles of dealing with things, and then we got on to the issue of money. I was thinking, you know, it was that era back then that we're discussing that gave birth to Social Security retirement benefits, mm-hmm. that gave birth to Medicare as a health plan for retirees. And it's a very interesting thing. I believe when those came into existence, there was, I wasn't aware back then. I may have been alive, but not aware. That those two programs, for example, inspired confidence. They inspired some relaxation about the notion of retirement. But one of the observations that we cannot escape is how much longer we're living today. People back then would retire at 65 and they'd be gone at 72. And interestingly enough, the Social Security retirement benefit structure and the Medicare structure were based on those sorts of actuarial assumptions back then, and that is part of the problem mm-hmm. that we're seeing today. People are not retiring at 65 and are gone at 72. They may be retiring at 62 and they're still here at age 100.
Wow.
And to be given a lifetime guaranteed pension from a funding standpoint, that, as you know, that's a big nut to crack, Dave. So I'm imagining there's more insecurity today, even though there's maybe some prevailing personal confidence about being able to save and create your own personal wealth and savings. I'm imagining that confidence was displaced off onto these government programs because it was going to be there, and you were certainly going to live long enough for the most part to be able to enjoy it. So very different times we're in today.
Yeah, there's no question. It seems that that's the case. And, of course, with the last five, 6 years, you know, people get worried. And, you know, certainly self-help books have been one of the more popular books for the last 40 years. And I, you know, people are seeking help. They want to be able to control their destiny. I think most people don't know how, though. I think it's a skill set. It's a state of mind. It's a set of beliefs and a lot of internal qualities that people succumb to the external forces versus their own internal empowerment.
We talked about the prevalence of information in the information age, and I think that can have good effects and bad effects. But as we talk about confidence in retirement, in one given day, you can be inspired by the opportunities of America and the things that can be done, and you know you have skills, and you can be very much enthused and inspired. Where on the other hand, you read some of the things that are going on right now. You read what's going to happen in 2 days, from now if nothing changes, and I'm not expecting that it will, but...
Because I think they're on vacation.
Yeah, I think they've been on vacation for a while. It's really a shame that we've backed ourselves into the corner that we have. Some of it was maybe negligence, I suppose, or just inattentiveness, but some of it was coming to grips with the very reality of what I said, just simply how much longer people are living. Medical science has backed us into a corner. We love it. We embrace it. We fund it. We just can't get enough of medical science keeping us going longer and longer, but it's not always with the quality of life that we would like. Then we find ourselves needing long-term care. We may not be financially prepared for that, and that can really throw a monkey wrench into a lot of planning. In fact, we were discussing the issue of long-term care facilities or what some refer to as retirement homes. You had a thought or two on that, Jerry. Refresh my memory on that.
I can remember when we were first looking for a home several years back, realtors used to show us places that would have what they call a mother-in-law setup. Mm. There'd be a little house in the back, or there'd be an apartment on the back, and it was a standard thing when your elders reached the age that they weren't in their own home, they went to live with somebody. And of course, that has totally changed nowadays.
Sure.
Totally.
Sure.
Can you believe this show is basically at the end, only a few minutes left? I think we should give out some contact information. Jerry, how do they read your great stuff? Do you have a website, email?
I have a website about my book, and I have an email. I can be reached just from my last name, niskern@cox.net. And my column appears the last week of the month in the little community section of all the newspapers. There's a Phoenix section, a Scottsdale section, Gilbert, whatever. That's where you would find my column.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been most fascinating. Larry, how do they get in touch with you?
The best thing to do is go to my website, Dave, which is www.riiadvisors.com.
That is fantastic. So this was unique today.
Very different show. A lot of fun.
A lot of fun. And, Jerry, how much fun did you have?
Well, I enjoyed it. Thanks for having me.
I could tell you're a great writer because the way you describe certain words or the use of words, it's very descriptive, very visual, brings back interesting sensations. I can't wait to read the book.
Yeah, I would like our listeners to keep their eyes peeled for Jerry's column. It is the case, right, that you can go back in time through archives with the paper?
Yes, you can.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Look for Jerry Niskern, N-I-S-K-E-R-N, and that's Jerry with a G, and for her book on Amazon.com called Don't Throw the Bread.
Excellent. And thank you again, Jerry and Larry, and I'm going to change my name to Perry.
To Perry.
Okay.
Perry.
Or Perry. Anyway, thanks again. And, of course, we'll be back tomorrow. Breakthrough Sports, Real Hockey Talk. We're going to make our picks with the Western Conference. Who's going to make the playoffs? And we'll be there at 2 o'clock. See you then.